Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.
Like Hallie Go again here on Circles of Change and live. We're calling to New York City, the epicenter of a lot of focus right now on the weather for today. Bruce Frankel, how are you this morning, Bruce?
I'm great, Zara. How are you?
Oh, it couldn't be. We got sunshine out here, no rain except maybe in the afternoon.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, exactly. Different
well,
time
we
of year.
We won't enjoy the sun because we apparently aren't going to see it for a couple of days.
That's right. Well, we also have 100 degrees coupled with that, so I'd go for some cooler temps, quite frankly. Well, Bruce, again, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show once a month. And, of course, Anchored is the terrific book you published now over a year and a half ago, right? What Should I Do yep. with the Rest of My Life? For our listeners who may not be familiar with Bruce's work, what he did is actually went out and surveyed a wide cornucopia of individuals, all who were around age 60, that had gone on to do tremendous things and transitioned their life. And if I recall, Bruce, of course, you did that at a point in time when your world was changing, wasn't it, from a professional standpoint?
That's correct. I decided to leave full-time journalism and I had gone back to school to study poetry and become a teacher of poetry, and my world kind of collapsed a bit. My long marriage ended, and I ended up having to try to figure out what I was going to do with the rest of my life.
Exactly. Well, today I think we're going to circle right back to that topic of poetry, right? Because the one story you wanted to tell us about that I understand you didn't include your book relates to this whole topic you wanted to pose with us, this idea of grit.
Yeah, the two things that I've been thinking about grit for a while, though, when I was writing my book, I didn't really precisely name it as grit. I thought of it more as perseverance or hardiness, resilience, ambition, and the idea of grit in psychology really wasn't wasn't formed as a personality trait until a researcher did so a few years ago, a researcher named Angela Lee Duckworth, and we'll come back to her. But I thought a lot about grit when I was working on a chapter, which I ended up not including in the book, on a poet named Samuel Menashe. And Samuel died this week at the age of 85. And what was astonishing about, there were many things that were actually very astonishing about him. He wrote these very jewel-like, gnomic, crystalline poems.
Love your word choice, yeah.
Concise. I mean, he disliked when people called them brief or small. He saw them as haiku-like concision,
yes.
But they weren't haikus. And he was also, so he began writing, he went to a very good public high school in New York, graduated at about 16, went to Queens College and wanted to be a chemist, I believe he was studying. And then the war came along, World War II, and he went off to fight in the war and fought at the Battle of the Bulge and saw many terrible things as a soldier and ended up staying in Paris and studying at the Sorbonne. And when he came back to the United States, it was as if some other ambition had been taken out of him, and he really wanted to write. And in about 1949, he wrote the first lines of his first poem came to him, and he wrote, and he began writing. And he really, he had a brief in England in the 1960s. He was kind of discovered, and a book was published there, and that book received fair amount of praise. It was his first book, and then he was forgotten, and he couldn't get a book published in the United States until he was in his 50s, and that book wasn't even barely reviewed, and he was fairly snubbed throughout the poetry circles in New York for many years. And then finally, a few years ago, when he was, I think he was already 79 at that point, he was given the neglected master's award, which was the first time it had ever been given by the Poetry Foundation, and a cash prize of $50,000. That was in 2004. For the works of poetry that he created, which one British scholar, P.N. Furbank, called perfect little mechanisms, minute cathedrals. And they were. And he just persisted, and he lived in a flat. The first time I visited him was in middle of winter. He lived in the fifth floor walk-up. With emphysema, where he had lived for over 32 years, and nothing had changed. There was still a clawfoot bathtub in the kitchen when you entered. That didn't work. He didn't use it. He had a table top on it and used it sometimes to eat there. But he was a remarkable character, and I really dearly loved him, liked him a great deal. Not an easy man in some ways, but he persisted. And so, you know, I love that. And I just like, if I could briefly read, his poems are very brief, so your readers might enjoy hearing one of his poems, I thought. So one poem, which was called At a Standstill, which actually has to do with that bathtub and how he came to see at one point his life in terms of advancing in career and so forth, which it didn't do. So at a standstill. That statue, that cast of my solitude, has found its niche in this kitchen where I do not eat, where the bathtub stands upon cat feet. I did not advance. I cannot retreat. And, you know, it kind of summarizes where he was for a long time. He also wrote...
If I'd offer said, though, also, though, that closing line of, I cannot retreat, is really where you say, this is the man that still stayed the course.
That's it. You know, even though he did not advance in, say, poetry circles, and he really did rue the... people, the poets who were academics and profited by each other's interest in their academic work or helped each other. But he persisted in writing poetry that was at that time out of style in a way. He rhymed his poems. They were very brief. They weren't, abstract. You don't have to work hard to figure out his poetry. It's very direct and brief. And so he wasn't in fashion. But, you know, eventually, people recognized his value, though it came late in life, and he only moved out of his Coldwater flat in 2010, the year before he died.
What do you know? And I think that story is not uncommon sometimes. We hear of, you know, people later in life, whatever later means, right, that they still stay the course and are kind of discovered. I mean, I love that, the neglected master. I mean, this is not a light title at all. I mean, this just call someone a master carries very heavy nuances in the fields of literature and poetry, doesn't it, Bruce?
It absolutely does. And, you know, when you look at Samuel Menashe's poems, you realize just how, you know, he told me on a number of occasions that he didn't have, if in his apartment he wrote at a desk, there was no typewriter on it, there was no computer on it, there were just a tin can of pens and pencils and paper, and that's what he used. But he often would compose a poem in his head and carry it around in his head for a long time. And he said, you know, if I forgot a line when I went to finally write it down, then it didn't deserve to be in the poem in the first place. So, you know, he was unique in that way. And you know, I admire his grit.
And, you know, we had another author on just last week, as a matter of fact, who talked about the book she finally has published here. And it was a story that she had written in her head when she was in high school. So here we are 20 years later, and now it's manifesting.
Yeah, and so that whole, to me, this idea of grit is really important. And it really is true of many of the people in What Should I Do With the Rest of My Life. So I began, I was very interested a few years ago to read about the work that Dr. Duckworth, Angela Duckworth, had done at the University of Pennsylvania under the tutelage of Martin Seligman, the father of positive psychology.
You bet, yeah.
But I'd kind of forgotten about it a little until this week when I read a blog by another neuroscientist writer, Joan Allaire, who wrote a book called Proust is a Neuroscientist, was a neuroscientist. It's a wonderful book.
Yep.
And his blog, he wrote about delivering the convocation speech at Earlham College on Monday. And in his talk, he talked about grit and grittier kids and referenced the work. And I'd just like to, you know, he said in his speech that grit is not just about stubborn persistence.
Mm-hmm.
It's no use persisting after all if a goal is truly impossible. While you've no doubt been bombarded with successful people telling you that dreams come true, to believe the reality is that not every goal is worth pursuing.
Mm-hmm.
And he went on to say, you know, basically that he might want to be an NBA basketball player. He's not a big guy, but he's not Spud Webb, and he's not likely to succeed. He might want to write the great American novel, but he may not really have the talent for it. So he said, you know, we can waste a lot of time if we choose the wrong dream to pursue. And the question is, how do you find the right dream to pursue? Which is kind of interesting to think about. So how do we decide that? And he came up with what he called the underwear test.
Right.
And the underwear test, as he explains, is that, you know, the human mind really is built to get bored easily. To, you know, if we think about our underwear, for instance, we don't feel it after a while, and we're not very conscious of it. We don't really, we get very habituated to the touch of cotton and so forth. And that's true of lots of things.
Sure,
you know,
exactly.
We love that first taste of chocolate cake, but the second taste isn't quite as good, the third less, or your iPhone, you might love it the first day and the first week, but then it's just a thing in your pocket with 10,000 songs on it, you know? So what he says and what Duckworth's studies have shown is there's the difference is that grit requires passion, or grit requires love.
Right.
And that love is just another word for something that doesn't get old. Love is, you know, the opposite of underwear, he says.
Yep. Well, and it, not only does it not get old, but it reshapes itself, it reforms itself in some way as other things manifest around it, right? I mean, that idea to say, I mean, I'm certain we've got listeners here that are struggling with a career choice or other challenges in their life, but if you still can stay anchored on not the how I'm going to get there, but the what that I'm ever the more focused on, that in time you will make decisions or the resources will come your way or things that might be viewed as roadblocks are actually signposts to go in a different direction, right, Bruce?
Well, yeah, I think you're right. I would might say that, I mean, one thing that's really clear from Duckworth's study is that people who stay with a goal are more likely to succeed than people that move frequently around to different things. She did six studies, I guess, and I'll just speak to two or three of them real quickly that are fascinating. One of them had to do with cadets at West Point. So the Army had always been very interested in figuring out how to screen for cadets who will stay the course,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, many quit, 5% quit after the first summer as barracks beasts, they call them.
Right.
It's a tough first summer, and 5% quit. And they've looked at intelligence as a factor, they've looked at fitness as a factor, and they could never figure it out. And Duckworth had this idea about grit being the factor, and she tested for it, and it really turned out to be a great predictor of it. And those people who also did well in the grit test also did well in GPA and so forth. And one of the things that she has seen is that she also tested, she went to Harvard before she went to the University of Oxford and University of Pennsylvania. But at Harvard, she was fascinated by how some students did extremely well. They were all obviously very smart, and some of the kids she thought were the smartest didn't necessarily do the best. And she was fascinated about that. And she did a study in the Ivy League schools about grit as well. And what she discovered there was that the students who started out kind of focused and with their interest and pursued their passion without changing goals frequently and objectives frequently, they ultimately did the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
because you get vested, you get committed, and you also, perhaps those that have got grit know that these cycles of difficulty that you pass through are actually building muscle for you to take on the next curve of the racetrack.
Well, that's a really good point, and it's actually a point that's a really good point, Sarah. And there's a Stanford University psychologist, Carol Dweck, who did a study on what she calls growth mindset, mm-hmm. as opposed to fixed mindset.
Right.
And this also has to do with learning and children, but it really applies to all of us. And what she found was that when people think that it's their effort that that matters, that's making them succeed, and they are invested in their effort, they ultimately learn better than those who have a fixed mindset. So in one experiment, they gave kids tests, and they told them, one group of kids, you did great. You must have really worked hard on this. You must have worked really hard on this. And the other group, they told, you did great on this. You must be so smart.
Mm-hmm.
And then they purposely gave them another test at a later point that was significantly harder and purposely difficult. And what they found was that the kids who were told, you did great because you worked hard, ended up putting more effort in the test, mm-hmm. and did better, regardless of intelligence, than as measured by IQ tests, than the group that was told, you're smart. Those kids gave up more quickly. So there's, you know, and lots of studies has also shown us that Anders Ericsson in Florida State University has shown us that, you know, putting in 10,000 hours is necessary to become an expert. You know, that we have to put in effort is a key to success.
But you know, the other piece of it, though, you circle back, though, and the idea of grit isn't just that stick-to-itiveness, self-perseverance, and this whole concept, this all falls in the area of self-discipline, right? But that it's also linked to something that somebody really deep in their heart is passionate about. You know, to start the conversation then about Samuel Menashe, too, it isn't just that he's got a passion about it, but he's also got that gift. And to not let anybody or any circumstance try to derail you if that's your end goal, right?
That's key, and you're right. And it is, it's this unique, and I don't think anyone really, as much as scientists may study it, or we may, I think there's still something there that we can't quite put our fingers
mm-hmm.
on, but there is this interaction between what we love and what we're passionate about and what excites our brains and excites us and continues to keep us interested, that keeps us, and we have a goal that we're excited about reaching. So
very good. Well, Bruce, thank you so very much. Again, our listeners should check out his book, What Should I Do with the Rest of My Life? And we'll catch up with you next month, and keep the umbrella ready there in New York City.
Will do. Thank you very much.
You bet. Take care.
Stay warm.
You bet. Bye. We shall. That's easy to do here in Tucson for sure. Thanks again, folks.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it. Going places you hadn't dreamed were possible.
The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, 877-544-2580.
Being with us, see ya.